Hello and welcome into this edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and a bit of absurdity. It's the Thursday, April 2nd edition of the podcast. Welcome aboard. Good to have you on the bus as we take this trip through Crazy Town, also known as life in the world today as we know it, under the coronavirus. How are you doing? I hope you're fine. Hope things are well with you. I hope that you and yours are, making the best of things, regardless of where or when you may be listening. I know that there are people listening in various corners of the country and other nations as well, besides the United States. And wherever you may be, I hope you're doing well. I hope things are going all right for you. And that you are being smart, unlike so many people who are causing the coronavirus to spread. People being selfish, crazy, stupid, and doing things they're being warned against doing. It's just amazing to me how self-centered some people can be. It's almost like full-grown adults are behaving like high school kids on spring break. Oh, you can't tell me what to do. Hey, if I get sick, I get sick. What about the other people that you get sick? What about those people? I think cabin fever's getting to me. I'm not getting out much nowadays. I know you aren't either. I spent a little time yesterday taking a drive in the countryside, taking Princess Kimber the Wonder Dog for a ride. She loves to go for rides, and that I just don't understand. I can say to her, hey, you want to go for a ride? And the next thing you know, she is barking and bouncing and beating me to the door. She's ready to get out. And I guess I don't blame her. Change of scenery can be good. The only excitement she ever gets is when squirrels are on the deck. So she's ready to go. So we went. And what I was doing was looking for a place to fly. I took the drone out yesterday. A beautiful sunny day. A bit on the windy side. That's what I did yesterday. I took the drone out for a spin and was unsuccessful in finding a place to go because it just, no place seemed to appeal to me. And there's a little thing about going out and doing that alone that kind of wigs me out, because even, especially the way things are right now, if somebody walks up on you while you're piloting a drone, they are either curious or they have not the best of intentions. And it's not like I was in some metro area on the bad side of town, the south side of the Chicago. I was out in the country, but still there's something about pulling into a parking lot and launching the drone. And especially if you're using goggles, video goggles, for piloting, especially then, it's a little creepy because you're listening to what's going on around you. For example, I showed you on the Facebook live feed the other day, and I've shared on the social media the video that I shot last Friday of shopping centers in the Birmingham area. At one point at the last shopping center, Jane was in the car. She's supposed to be my security, my spotter. She's in the car on her phone tweeting people or texting people. She's carrying on conversations. She's on Facebook. She's doing things like that. She is not looking out for me. she's distracted, completely distracted. And I'm flying this drone around this big shopping center called the Summit. And I'm slipping it sideways, trying to get the best shot I can of the entire place and keep things moving and turning. And the controls are kind of wonky because I've done a factory reset on it and I haven't retooled everything yet. And so I'm really focused. And then I realize I hear footsteps. I hear this crunch, 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 crunch. It's asphalt and gravel. And I hear somebody walking towards me. And I tip the goggles up a little bit and see there's some guy who's just kind of walking through the area, and he's given me a wide berth. Probably because I look really, really weird with these big goggles on my head. With they've got these stick-on eyeballs on the front of them that look like they're angry. Thanks, Ken Heron. And so there we are. That might have kept him away. He might have looked at me and thought, "Well, that guy's crazy." But that's a creepy feeling when your eyes are focused on what the camera on the drone is seeing, and then you realize you can hear somebody walking towards you. That's a little bit scary. So I after that experience Friday, I just got to the point where I wasn't all that keen on flying the thing, especially since the one place I really wanted to shoot, my launching spot would have been at a Dollar General across the highway, which is fine because as long as you're not flying over traffic, you can fly across the highway. So you just watch, and there's not much traffic, trust me, but you watch, you make sure you're not going to be flying over any cars, and you fly across the highway and then make your progress towards where you're going. And the plan was to fly across a big open field. There were cows, things like that. So I was going to be focused downward and then slowly tilt up as I flew forward. And there's a big water park out in the countryside. And my goal was to fly to the water park and to do a few orbits around the water park and sweep across it from place to place and get a bunch of footage and then cut that together and lay music over it and put out another exploring video. That's my drone YouTube channel. It's Exploring Videos. And I looked at the parking lot at the DG, the Dollar General, and I don't know if you've been out and about, but the DG is hopping nowadays. It's one of the busiest places there is. The Dollar General is making some bread. They are cashing it in because their parking lots are full right now when they normally would not be. People are not going to grocery stores. They're not going the distance they need to go. They're going to the nearest possible place they can get a loaf of bread or a pack of toilet paper or something like that. And the DG has the toilet paper, by the way. If you're looking for toilet paper, go to Dollar General. They've usually got a sign up that says two-pack limit or something like that. You can only get one or two packages, but you can get it. And they keep it in stock, and they're policing it so that they don't run out and people don't come in and hoard and empty their shelves. So the Dollar Generals have toilet paper. Well, I looked at the Dollar General parking lot and thought, I will spend most of my time talking to people, answering questions about what I'm doing, answering questions about the drone, and where I was, my basic thought was that social distancing would not be considered in any way, shape, or form. So I came home and made a PBJ. That was lunch yesterday. I had a PBJ, and then I put the drone up off the deck on the back of the house and flew a couple of miles out and actually was able to reach a rock quarry that's in the countryside out behind where we live a couple of miles away. And was really excited about that and thought, this is awesome. This is going to be a great approach shot. There's the rock quarry. The rock quarry is cut into the side of a hill, and there's this rock wall back behind it. And it's just a gorgeous, it's just perfect. And I thought, I can make some great footage out of this. This will be a great video. And then I started getting signal interruptions, and I lost contact, and it shifted into return to home mode, and I couldn't control it. And I thought, well, that's okay, because at least I've got the countryside flight. I've got the approach to the rock quarry and the water, the green water, the greenish blue water in the bottom. And the everything is starting to, the leaves are starting to come out and the trees are starting to bloom and the countryside looks nice. And I thought, at least I've got that and I can get in the car and drive over there and then do a flyover and orbits and things like that and actually put together the other footage. And so I got the drone back under control. I got signal back again and I brought it back and came in the house and pulled the SD card out of the drone and popped it into my video computer, and nothing was there. The beginning of the flight was there. The end of the flight was there. But the center part where I'm flying across country and getting to the rock quarry, not there. I don't know what happened. Maybe I inadvertently bumped the record button on the remote at some point, but I turned off the recording and I didn't have it. I got nothing. So yesterday was pretty much a bust. It was just a bust. So I've got to plan that out again and see if maybe, just maybe, I can make it happen today. Well, if you're on your way to the DG looking for some toilet paper, watch out for big rigs. A big rig hauling a trailer full of toilet paper to San Antonio, Texas, crashed and caught fire early yesterday morning, just outside of Dallas in Hutchins, Texas. They tweeted, the ABC affiliate there tweeted, "No April Fool's joke, a semi carrying industrial-sized toilet paper overturned and caught fire westbound on I-20 and I-45 in Dallas. Driver's okay." According to Fox San Antonio, the driver was en route to the city from Alabama when he dozed off while looking for a rest stop. He and his dog, Moochie, both survived the crash. Oh, thank goodness Moochie's okay. The driver reportedly told the police he's never been involved in an accident like this in 20 years of driving trucks, but he said he'll probably look for a new occupation. The Texas DOT says the toilet paper, which was in large rolls used in businesses, burned extensively and took some time to clean up. Bless their hearts. Now, this was not Angel Soft. It was not any of the brands you see on TV. This is those great big rolls that you see that they put in, like, in the stores, in those big dispensers in the stores. You go to a restroom, like at Walmart or someplace like that. That's what that was. Oh, but maybe we should have a moment of silence for the lost toilet paper. Nah. I know everybody is altering their behavior nowadays. You've changed up your routine. You're trying to stay home. You're looking for things to do with your kids. You're trying to find things to occupy yourself. You're wearing out Netflix and other services and spending a lot of time online. I know you're spending a lot of time online because the internet's moving a lot more slowly than it usually does. When I'm trying to get things done online, I'm watching things spin as things load. And some people are not. Among those people, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. That's right. Notorious RBG is going to the gym. Yep, she's the notorious RBG. She's reportedly keeping up her exercise routine, working out daily with her trainer, even though most public gyms across the country have been shuttered over concerns about the spread of the novel coronavirus, COVID-19. Her trainer told Law 360 in a report published Tuesday, "Everybody's been shut down. The only reason why I didn't shut the justice down is because, hey, she ain't having it. She has that grandfather status to me. If she wants to train, that's the least I can do. She doesn't make excuses not to do it, so we find ways to do it." Fortunately for Ginsburg, she has access to the private Supreme Court gym, which is there for the justices' use only, and she doesn't have to rely on equipment used by hundreds of other people. Law 360 doesn't specifically say that Ginsburg is the only justice working out on the equipment currently, but the Supreme Court, like other courts across the country, is shut down to most business, and the justices are now working remotely. According to the New York Post, the High Court closed to the public weeks ago and indefinitely postponed 2 weeks of March oral arguments for the first time since the 1918 Spanish flu outbreak. For cases that have already been heard, the justices can continue to deliberate and release opinions remotely. To protect the four-time cancer survivor, Ginsburg's trainer says he wipes down all the equipment she uses with sanitizing wipes before and after her workouts, and he maintains strict social distancing from the justice during her workouts, just in case either party has an illness. Ginsburg isn't specifically listed as vulnerable to the disease, but she's certainly within the demographic most deeply affected by coronavirus. The trainer says all I have to do is set it up and she just automatically knows exactly what I want to do. I don't have to grab her, hold her, get up close and personal. I don't know anybody who doesn't feel better after a workout's completed. And that includes the Justice, no matter what. We try to get a workout in twice a week. So, how about that? Ruth Bader Ginsburg is still going to work out in spite of the coronavirus. You know, that woman has been through so much. Cancer, all kinds of things. And she still survives. I think she'd survive a bout with COVID-19. It makes me wonder if she's actually human. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Good to have you along. It's the Thursday, April 2nd, 2020 edition. And I'm out of breath because I just ran upstairs and back down again. Oh my goodness gracious. What does that say? I spend too much time in the chair right here and not moving around. Well, it's not a good time for anybody anywhere around the world, really. And things would be better if we actually got some good information about things. It's hard to trust what's coming out of practically anywhere because we keep hearing so many versions of things. For example, one thing that's been rattling the cages of people on the news lately is what's going on with hydroxycodone, the drug, the... You know what? The word just went poof, right out of my head, but you know exactly what I'm talking about. There have been treatments, there have been tests, there are things going on, there are trials happening, and we're not hearing a lot coming back. I saw a brief report this morning early that looks optimistic, that 80% of those who are being tested in a small group is 60-something people. But 80% of those people, a little over 80% actually, are showing positive response and recovering. And we're seeing recommendations that people in the medical profession who are involved with COVID-19 patients should be taking hydroxychloroquine. See, it came back. They should be taking this as a preventative measure. A prophylactic measure to protect themselves, because evidence is saying to us that that does work. And there are people who, I've been seeing reports in stories online of people who have been taking some form of chloroquine as an ongoing treatment for something for quite some time, who have been exposed and have not been suffering from COVID-19. So apparently it really does work and it works really well, but we're not hearing a lot about it. And it's very curious. You combine that with the mainstream news media's treatment of the ongoing reports, the daily coronavirus task force pressers that are happening at the White House. CNN and MSNBC have decided to stop carrying them. And now we're not hearing about what's happening with the hydroxychloroquine tests, the trials. And I think those are probably connected. And here's what I'm going to say about this. President Trump's approval rating has spiked. It's going way up. People see the man for who he really is instead of through the lens of the press and the stories on the news. They're home. They're watching TV. They are craving information. They want to know what's going on. And so they've been watching. They've been watching these press meetings. They've been watching the reports coming out of the task force and seeing President Trump and seeing him as he really is, not through the lens of reporting by the leftist press. And as a result, they like what they're seeing, and it's not what they thought. They're surprised, and they're saying, yeah, we like what he's doing. We think he's handling it well, and his approval rating is going up. And so the two news outlets that have been the harshest against him and have worked the hardest to destroy him have decided not to carry these sessions anymore, not to carry these reports. And I think, as well, they're not reporting on the success of the tests of hydrochloroquine. Now, that sounds very conspiracy theory, I know. But having watched these people and knowing how they think and how they operate, it is not outside the realm of possibility. It could very well be what's happening. We should be skeptical of pretty much anything they tell us about this, because they have been working against the president from day one, hand in hand with the Democrats, who are delusional, already talking about doing investigations after we're beyond this, looking for another way to undermine the president and find ways to impeach him. They're already talking about it. Right now, they're talking about it. Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff have already made it public. The same people who were busy trying to impeach the president when he was putting together the coronavirus task force and banning travel from the source of the contagion. The very same people who called him a racist for doing so, for protecting the citizens of the United States of America, are going to try again to impeach the man. It's unbelievable. Something else that's unbelievable is the news coming out of China. A report by Breitbart has revealed that there has been rising skepticism of the numbers of deceased, that is, being reported by Chinese authorities as a result of the coronavirus. As reports from eyewitnesses in Wuhan described numbers drastically higher than the Communist Party is advertising to the world. The entire of Wuhan was under an intense authoritarian lockdown for months. Authorities took extreme measures, like welding the doors shut of people who had tested positive to keep them from leaving their homes and possibly infecting more people. In the middle of March, Chinese authorities announced that there were no more new cases of the coronavirus being discovered in Wuhan, and businesses started to be allowed to reopen. Funeral homes allowed thousands of people to pick up the urns supposedly containing their loved ones. Breitbart reported on the developing questions surrounding the suspect death toll. Citing funeral homes, directors and eyewitnesses, multiple reports suggest that the number of urns collected was far larger than that possible if Beijing had accurately reported the number of cases. The Epoch Times, an anti-communist newspaper that has documented skepticism of official government figures from within Wuhan since the onset of the pandemic, estimated over 32,000 deaths attributable to Chinese coronavirus in Wuhan in a report on Sunday. 32,000. The newspaper noted that the urns collected over the weekend, this past weekend, had amassed between January 23rd, when the lockdown began, to March 23rd, when families were first allowed to begin retrieving them. Citing sources in various Wuhan funeral homes and reports from other outlets, such as the independent Chinese media outlet Caixin, or is that Caixin? I think it's Caixin. The Epoch Times concluded that Wuhan's seven funeral homes possessed 40,000 urns, each urn containing the remains of one person during the lockdown, suggesting that 40,000 people died in the city during that time. Discounting the average number of deaths a day in Wuhan in 2018, the latest year for which public statistics are available, the newspaper concluded that at least 32,140 people have died of Chinese coronavirus in Wuhan. These numbers echoed the warning of funeral directors speaking to the Epoch Times in February, concerned that they did not have the capacity to handle the sheer number of bodies the hospitals were sending them. A report in the publication that month found that each Wuhan crematorium was handling as much as five times the normal intake of bodies per day. China has reported 82,198 total cases of the coronavirus since the outbreak started in November, and claimed that 3,308 people died as a result. The worldwide count of positive cases of the coronavirus is 737,929. This is as of the other day. And 35,019 have died from complications due to the virus. I saw a report, I believe it was yesterday, that the crematoriums were constantly active, even today, even now. The crematoriums are geared up. Now, China has concealed the extent of the coronavirus outbreak, underreporting both total cases and deaths suffered from the disease. This is the conclusion of the U.S. intelligence community in a classified report to the White House, according to three U.S. officials. And we'll dig further into that after the break. This is why I've been saying we can't trust anything coming out of China. They're a communist country. They're not going to tell the rest of the world the truth. Because communism will not acknowledge its failures. Communism always blames others. Communism always shifts responsibility off of itself. Because as far as the communists are concerned, they can do no wrong. So they will never admit wrong. They will never allow anyone to understand or know the truth about their failures. And China's failures are costing the rest of the world. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there. It is April 2nd, 2020. We were looking at a story about the dishonesty of China, and I want to get back into that. Pull this back up again here. I got sidetracked as usual. During the break, I'm scanning social media, looking at things. And it just kills me that there are some people in the progressive press, the progressive news media, who insist on perpetuating something which is actually a hoax. And that is that Donald Trump called the coronavirus a hoax. The latest report I saw was that CNN's Don Lemon referred to it and continues to say that Donald Trump called the coronavirus a hoax, when actually he did not. Those of us who have been paying attention, actually really been following things, have actually looked at the stories, looked at the video, read the transcripts, understand that he was calling the Democrats' response to what he was trying to get done to protect America. He was talking about the Democrats perpetrating a hoax. He wasn't calling the coronavirus a hoax. But people like Don Lemon and others on the progressive side don't bother to actually do real research. They just parrot what they've been taught to say. Which is why I go back to what I've been saying to you, and that is, stop listening to the mainstream progressive press. And please stop getting your information from social media. My sweet wife, Jane, last night asked me about, when was it? No, it was this morning. She asked me about something else a friend of hers had posted on social media about coronavirus and what's happening. And it was a complete and total farce. It was totally false. And I explained to her that it was false. And I told her again, baby, you can't believe anything you see on Facebook today. You have to be very careful and very discerning about what you see on Facebook or Twitter or any place on social media, because people are spreading rumors as though they are the gospel truth. And rumors are not the gospel truth. Social media is like the biggest gossip circle in the world. It's not like the biggest gossip circle in the world. It actually is the biggest gossip circle in the world. And by the time the gossip goes through two or three hands, it doesn't resemble what it started out to be. Oh, so-and-so heard this from so-and-so. And they're going to be doing this. They're going to start shutting all this down, and they're going to call out the National Guard here and all that. And you know what? There's talk, but it's not happening yet. And there are many things like that that will never happen that we're hearing coming back through the grapevine of social media. You can't trust what you see on social media unless you are curating your social media and you're pulling up trustworthy sources, because news organizations, trustworthy news organizations, do feed social media, and you get links to stories, and you can do some digging using the links provided by social media accounts from trustworthy news sources. But you should also dig beyond that. Go check a few more websites, see what they have to report. That's one reason I keep, I've actually got two tabs open at worldometers.com, worldometers.info, worldometers.info. I have one open to coronavirus and one open to the flu. And that's where I get my information that I pass along to you every day. Total cases in the United States of America, 215,357. 354 new cases in the last 24 hours. The total deaths, 5,113. And that's 11 new deaths in the last 24 hours. And 8,878 recoveries. Almost 9,000 people we know of have recovered. And when we start actually doing the serum test, the where we actually are testing people on a broader basis, checking their blood for the antibodies, we're probably going to find that that number is a fraction, a microscopic fraction of the people who've actually already had the coronavirus and recovered. And when we find that out, we'll have a large pool of people to pull from to start creating vaccines to protect people. And that's just around the corner. Things are developing so quickly since things have gotten into the hands of the private sector. Things are developing quickly. That's why we have respirators. That's why we have tests. That's why we have the results on the drugs that we know about, because the private sector has taken upon itself to do things, to actually do things, as opposed to arguing about things in chambers and posturing for the news media, like politicians in Washington, D.C. Things are really happening. So, around the world, the total deaths so far from the coronavirus, 48,571. From the flu, 122,959 during roughly the same period of time. Back to China. These three officials I mentioned earlier, let me just give you that first part again. China has concealed the extent of the coronavirus outbreak in its country, underreporting both total cases and deaths it suffered from the disease. The U.S. intelligence community has concluded in a classified report to the White House, according to three U.S. officials. These officials asked not to be identified because this report is secret, and they declined to detail its contents. But the thrust, they say, is that China's public reporting on cases and deaths is intentionally incomplete. Two of the officials said the report concludes that China's numbers are fake. The report was received by the White House last week, according to one of these officials. The outbreak began in China's Hubei province in late 2019, but the country has publicly reported only about 82,000 cases and 3,300 deaths, according to the data compiled by Johns Hopkins University. That compares to more than 189,000 cases and more than 4,000 deaths in the U.S., which has the largest publicly reported outbreak in the world. Communications staff at the White House and the Chinese embassy in Washington didn't immediately respond to requests for comment. Vice President Mike Pence said yesterday on CNN, "The reality is that we could have been better off if China had been more forthcoming. What appears evident now is that long before the world learned in December that China was dealing with this, and maybe as much as a month earlier than that, the outbreak was real in China." He was on with Wolf Blitzer, by the way, And Wolf Blitzer kept trying to turn that around to blame President Trump for not acting. He kept trying to make it Trump's fault that America is suffering, ignoring the facts on the ground that Donald Trump was ahead of everyone else and formed the coronavirus task force while the Democrats were pursuing impeachment and Nancy Pelosi was passing out souvenir pens. While China eventually imposed a strict lockdown beyond those of less autocratic nations, there has been considerable skepticism toward China's reported numbers, both outside and within the country. The Chinese government has repeatedly revised its methodology for counting cases, for weeks excluding people without symptoms entirely, and only on Tuesday added more than 1,500 asymptomatic cases to its total. Stacks of thousands of urns outside funeral homes in Hubei province have driven public doubt in Beijing's reporting. Republican lawmakers in the U.S. have been particularly harsh about China's role in the outbreak. Enhancing Beijing's role in the pandemic could be politically helpful to President Donald Trump, who has sought to shift blame for the U.S. outbreak away from his administration's delays in achieving widespread testing for the virus and mobilizing greater production of supplies such as face masks and hospital ventilators. Let's stop for a moment right here. His administration's delays in achieving widespread testing were actually not, even though the buck stops with the president, the reason that there were delays were because Washington is a giant beast that doesn't move quickly. And as soon as he could find ways to get things moving more quickly, things began moving more quickly. And as soon as the private sector was unleashed and set free, it began moving far more quickly than the government sector ever could. Senator Ben Sasse, a Nebraska Republican, said in a statement after Bloomberg News published this report, "The claim that the United States has more coronavirus deaths than China is false." Without commenting on any classified information, this much is painfully obvious. The Chinese Communist Party has lied, is lying, and will continue to lie about the coronavirus to protect the regime. Deborah Birx, the State Department immunologist advising the White House on its response to the outbreak, said Tuesday that China's public reporting influenced assumptions elsewhere in the world about the nature of the virus. She said at a news conference yesterday, the medical community interpreted the Chinese data as this was serious but smaller than anyone expected, because I think probably we were missing a significant amount of data. Now that what we see happened to Italy and see what has happened to Spain. China isn't the only country with suspect public reporting. Western officials have pointed to Iran, Russia, Indonesia, and especially North Korea, which has not reported a single case of the disease, as probable undercounts. Others, including Saudi Arabia and Egypt, may also be playing down their numbers. U.S. Secretary of State Michael Pompeo has publicly urged China and other nations to be transparent about their outbreaks. He has repeatedly accused China of covering up the extent of the problem and being slow to share information, especially in the weeks after the virus first emerged, and blocking offers of help from American experts. He said, "This data set matters. The development of medical therapies and public health measures to combat the virus so that we can save lives depends on the ability to have confidence and information about what has actually transpired. I would urge every nation, do your best to collect the data. Do your best to share the information. We're doing that. And we are. We are doing that. We're collecting information. We're doing the best we can. As I said, we have set the private sector free. And the private sector is working. The progressive news media is not reporting everything because it favors the president. But things are happening. We may be looking at a rough couple of weeks ahead, but we're also seeing indications that some places are already turning the corner. There is hope. Things are going to get better. You are listening to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your occasionally humble host, hoping that you're doing well and that your loved ones are as well. Oh, man, even during all of this that's going on, politics is still at play. I mentioned it early on in this podcast that the Democrats are already working on trying to find a way to crush President Trump as a result of what we're going through right now. They're actually letting their people, they're letting their folks know, yeah, we're going to look into how we're going to do a job performance evaluation on the president. Translated means, yeah, we're going to look at this and see if there's another way we can impeach the man. That's what they're going to do. Because to the Democrats, nothing matters but power and control. They lost that power and control when Trump defeated Hillary Clinton. They lost when our system of government protected us from Hillary Clinton. They lost that power and control that they had for 8 years. And they were confident that they were going to have it for 8 more. And by the time we got to the end of that 8 years, there would never be another Republican president because of the changes they would make. We interrupted it. And as a result, the fundamental transformation of the United States of America was derailed. Thank God Almighty. Well, they're still lying. They're trying to convince those low-information people who just believe what they're told instead of actually doing their own homework. They're trying to convince the low-information people that the president is doing a bad job. You'd be forgiven for thinking that President Donald Trump had absolutely pillaged the budget for the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, for instance. That's because the Democrats have made this claim a central part of their messaging. Joe Biden said on ABC's This Week at the beginning of March, they've cut the funding for the CDC. They've cut the Centers for Disease Control. They cut the funding for, they've tried to cut the funding for the for NIH, the National Institute of Health. The former VP doubled down on these arguments just a few days ago on Twitter, saying it's never a matter of if another pandemic will happen. It's just a matter of when, and it's the president's job to ensure we're ready. He tweeted that Friday. Donald Trump's careless, short-sighted actions left our nation ill-prepared, and now Americans are paying the price, he says. And he wasn't the only one. As factcheck.org noted, former New York City Mayor Mike Bloomberg claimed during the February 25th debate that Trump, quote, had defunded Centers for Disease Control, CDC, so we don't have the organization we need. In the same debate, Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar said that Trump had tried to cut back on the CDC. 2 days later, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said that the Trump budget calls for slashing almost $700 million from the Centers for Disease Control, and this was the budget which came out after we knew about the coronavirus threat. Now, Klobuchar and Pelosi's claims were a bit more fact-based than Biden and Bloomberg's, but they are still misleading. Trump did not, in fact, successfully cut the CDC's budget. And while he did request budget cuts, it turns out former President Barack Obama did exactly the same thing. So a bit of background. Every year, the president submits a budget proposal to Congress. This budget proposal is essentially a wish list. Even if his party controls Congress, which is where the budget originates from, there's nothing to say Congress needs to pay attention to it. Realistically, of course, the budget could serve as a guide for lawmakers when it comes to what the White House's priorities are. At least this year, however, it doesn't look like that's going to be the case. Here's what Wyoming Republican Senator Mike Enzi, chairman of the Senate Budget Committee, had to say about the president's 2021 budget proposal. Quote, Congress doesn't pay any attention to the president's budget exercise. End quote. He's not even giving it a hearing. Yes, the administration has proposed cuts to the CDC. Congress has rejected them. According to factcheck.org, the 2020 fiscal year budget, Trump proposed a $750.6 million cut in CDC funding. Congress approved a budget that increased it by $420 million. Trump signed it. He didn't veto it. He signed it. But there still remains the fact that Trump asked for a cut in CDC funding. That looks bad until you consider President Barack Obama did it in 5 of his 8 budget proposals. 5 out of 8. According to Fox News over the weekend, in its fiscal year 2013 budget, while Biden was vice president, the Obama administration sought a total funding level of $5.9 billion from the CDC. That's a $569 million cut from the 2012 budget of $6.46 million. In the fiscal year 2015, the Obama administration wanted a $414 million cut year over year. And again in the fiscal year of 2017 budget, the Obama administration looked to eliminate $251 million in CDC funding. The proposed cuts take into account money budgeted for the Prevention and Public Health Fund, which was established under the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act of 2010 to bolster the nation's health care system. When not including that fund, the Obama administration sought CDC cuts in 5 of its 8 years. Obama also asked for a cut to immunization funding amid a measles outbreak in 2015. And yet, the claim that Trump and Trump alone has been responsible for cuts that haven't happened has been coming out of the Biden campaign with the regularity of a drumbeat. It's not for lack of fact-checking. Factcheck.org and the Associated Press have made it clear the claim is inaccurate. The AP reported on February 26th, Trump's budgets have proposed cuts to public health only to be overruled by Congress, where there's strong bipartisan support for the agencies such as the CDC and the NIH. Instead, financing has increased. And remember, he signed those increases. Indeed, the money that government disease detectives first tapped to fight the latest outbreak was a congressional fund created for health emergencies. Some public health experts say a bigger concern than White House budgets is the steady erosion of a CDC grant program for state and local public health emergency preparedness, the front lines in detecting and battling new disease. But that decline was set in motion by a congressional budget measure that predates Trump. And this doesn't get talked about very often because, well, we don't talk that way about Saint Obama. He couldn't possibly have asked for the same sorts of cuts that President Trump did. Like it or not, that's the case. Joe Biden, we can assume, knows this, given he was there in the White House when these cuts were proposed. Well, he was present. I don't think he really knows where he is at any given time. He's hammering away at Trump because it's the only way he can get play in the media these days. The man who's almost certain to win the Democratic presidential nomination has been almost entirely absent from the media discussion these past few weeks. When he's managed to pop his head up from wherever he's been socially isolating, it hasn't gone well. Inaccurate at best and totally erroneous at worst. These claims need to be called out for what they are. If the media won't do it, Republicans must, or else this is going to be taken as gospel by voters when they go to the polls in November. So, we need to remember, the president's budget is a wish list presented to Congress. The House and the Senate don't have to take it into consideration, and they don't, as you've just heard. The president, President Trump, signed a budget which increased the funding to the CDC. He did not veto it. He signed it. So when they tell you about him decreasing the budget, it's not true. It is true that he proposed a cut, but so did Obama in 5 of his 8 years. So this is something that's not unusual or out of the ordinary. It's something that happens and happens with regularity. Presidents trying to move funding around. And usually when they're moving funding around, they're also moving responsibilities around. So things that were done by the agency that's having a reduction in funding will be done by someone else. So you also have to look at that. But is the mainstream progressive press going to look at that? Oh, no. They're too busy looking for ways to destroy a president. and they're irresponsibly reporting to the people of the United States and the world things that aren't not necessarily so. Which is why it's so important for all of us to do our own digging to get real accurate information, because we cannot trust the mainstream progressive press, and you cannot trust the rumor mill that is social media. Do some digging. Find some trustworthy news sites, and you'll start to see the pattern yourself. That's it for today. God bless you. We'll see you tomorrow on the next edition of The Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.